Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guest is blackjack player Joe, who does not have a last name for some reason. And to provide moral support and as a bodyguard, he brought along Colin Jones, who has been on a show a number of times on the church team, Blackjack Apprenticeship. Very good. So before we get into talking with Joe and Colin, there was an interesting thing in the news that a player who was playing in Dublin, Ireland, was doing really well on a roulette machine. And he lost one night, and the next night he kept winning and winning and winning. And they cashed out part of it and said, go back and keep playing. We're having trouble getting the money, but we'll pay you. And he went and paid, and then they finally decided, we think you're cheating, so we're not going to pay you. He took it to court, and the court said the casino does not have to pay if it doesn't want to. Period. End of story. Which would mean if you were thinking about playing in Ireland.
Well, all of the UK.
All of the UK?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a number of cases in London where they have just stolen people's money because basically their argument is we are private clubs. It's against the rule to count cards. You were counting cards. We're stealing your money. And
but, right, they do that in card counting. This is roulette. This is on a roulette machine. There was accusations of some kind of past posting, that the machine was allowing past posting, which would, if true, invalidate the win, to be sure. But it was, the court didn't get into whether or not that was a realistic accusation or not. It just said if the court doesn't want to, if the casino doesn't want to, doesn't have to.
Yeah. So, I mean, the UK casinos are as bad or worse than Indian casinos, so you have to, enter at your own risk.
All right. Let's talk to our guest. Joe started with a $10,000 bankroll 4 years ago. He's up to $900,000 himself, and he's bankrolling some others, puts him into the six-digit range. For some reason,
that gets to seven.
Is that seven?
Six-digit range.
Oh, wow. Boy, he's really going well.
Yeah, it could be eight, nine. We don't know.
Yeah, he doesn't know. It's just at least the low sevens. So he plays blackjack full times and thinks it's a viable source of income for new and seasoned players alike. Joe, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me. Your guys' voices have kept us company on the road for many, many hours and those long, dark drives in the middle of nowhere. So I appreciate you guys having the show.
I found it more interesting when female APs come up to me and say, they go to bed with me every night. And I just think that is really kind of interesting. But
well, that's what I was thinking, but I didn't want to say
it. Oh, well, good. Let's go. All right. So
too much information.
What was your initial goal when you started counting cards?
Okay, so when I first started, I told myself, you know, if I could just make like an extra $10,000 for the year, like to supplement my income, that would be just awesome, to just make an extra 10 grand playing blackjack on the side. And then by the end of that first year, I was up to 500,000. So the goal kept changing. You know, my friends would ask me, so okay, so you hit 10,000, so are you gonna like stop now? And I was like, well, the goal like changed to 20. And then, like, you know, several months go by, and then it's like, okay, the goal changed to 100, and it just keeps going up and up. So,
and how did you actually start? Did you get a book?
Yeah. Or? So, I'm like a blackjack apprenticeship baby, born and raised. Like, I saw the movie 21. Was, you know, it's Hollywood, and they over embellish stuff. So I wanted to kind of do a little fact checking, and then came across some YouTube videos, and
the
I saw
the girls in the strip clubs in the movies. Is that what drew you in?
Yeah, no, the losing, like when they were only like drunk, or like just the physical like abuse from the casino staff. It just seemed a little like too much, and it's also like the idea that you have to be like a genius to be able to do it. I kind of wanted to look into that. So then I found Blackjack Apprenticeship's video. They're kind of outlining mistakes in the movie 21.
And you could tell that we weren't geniuses.
Yeah. Well, I saw the video and I was like, you know, because YouTube, it's full of people who kind of like claim that they have this knowledge, this, you know, this secret knowledge. And then, but then I saw that their documentary, Holy Rollers, and then that convinced me, like, this is all real. And the thing I liked about that movie was it was like, these guys aren't mathematicians, you know. And that's what appealed to me, was because I'm so not sharp when it comes to mathematical theory or anything like that. I'm just like a worker bee, and I just work really hard. So it just really appealed to me.
And did you buy a book first, or you just went to the boot camp?
No, I just I joined their website. I did their video training course. I watched it a few times. I listened to Gambling with an Edge. I listened to their podcast, you know, read a bunch of forum posts. And then I just started practicing with their. They have some drills online that you can use, and on the iPhone app you can use. And that's pretty much all I needed. And also, one of the original goals, too, was to get backed off of every casino in the U.S. when I first started. So.
And how far have you gone to in that goal?
I have some stats here for you guys. So I've been backed off of 333 properties, trespassed from 44. I've been falsely arrested at 2. So the back-offs, those are actual properties. So I've been backed off, you know, 2 or 3, 4 times at one place, so it could be more. But
how many casinos are there with blackjack in the United States?
It's around like 450.
Wow,
in that range. So yeah,
I mean, really, are there any casinos you've never even been to yet?
Oh yeah, there's. Yeah, I have a ton I haven't been to. Some of the more remote ones or places that were just, you know, I may have heard it was a lower max, so I kind of skipped it. But
have you been to every casino in Las Vegas?
Yeah,
with blackjack?
Someone asked me that last night. I've been to every casino in Vegas, but I haven't been backed off in every casino in Vegas. So,
well, they keep billing the damn casino, so you're never going to be able to retire. Yeah,
or change your names, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first year, you go from 10,000 to 500. Mm-hmm. So your first $10,000 bankroll, what were you betting, and how did you ramp it up? And I assume that during that year, you never hit a big losing streak.
Right. So, I lied to you guys. I didn't start with 10,000. Okay, I actually started with 5,000 before I found some resources. So I started with 5,000, and I was betting 2 by 500 with a $5,000 bankroll.
So, and what could possibly go wrong?
I knew how to count, and I knew, you know, the true count, all that stuff, but I didn't know anything about bankroll management. So I went to the casino. I was on a work trip. You know, played, lost all my money. Lost my entire bankroll. And then the next morning we went to go work with a client, and he happened to be like an advantaged player of 30 years. Like, the odds of that was just blew my mind. And I was like, this is a sign. And then I told him what happened last night. And he was like, you needed like $50,000 bankroll to be doing what you were doing last night. And that just like blew me away. So I knew I would read forum posts and people would say their bet spreads, you know, like 2 by 500, you know, this. And then I would be like, okay, I know what a bet spread looks like, but I didn't know what risk or ruin was. So
we did some bankroll coaching, right? When you tried again with 10 grand.
And then I got
helped him out so he wasn't playing at 99% risk of ruin.
So then the second bankroll was really 10,000.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, and what did you start out betting?
That was, I think it was like the top bet was maybe like 2 by 200 on a really, really good game. Like it was like stand 17, double deck, like, you know, half a deck cut off. So,
and the ramp just I went straight up from there.
Yeah, I mean, I had some like highs and lows, of course, but I waited till 50,000 to play any shoe games. So I concentrated on really good double deck games for a while to keep the risk low and the hourly high enough.
And would you double the bank and then double your bet, or how did you do that?
I can't remember specifically, but I just used CVCX to keep it in the range. I think that sounds about right, though. Like, I didn't resize my bet, you know, every week or so or anything like that. I waited a while, and I also waited before I told anyone what I was doing until I hit 50,000, because I just didn't want to say to anyone like, I'm a professional blackjack player if I didn't hit a certain amount.
And you weren't like Yoshi, where all you could do was win.
No.
He played 1,000 hours in that first year,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I just hit
the road.
That's
a lot of hours.
Yeah, I was a freelance person before, so I didn't have a job to go to. So I packed my car, hit the road, and I was pretty much gone like 6-7 months out of the year, just on a long extended trip. And I had some long, I mean, I had like a 200-hour losing streak in there in that first year. And then I had another one that was like 100-hour, you know, so it's, I was able to experience
that's
it.
That's actually, yeah, that's yeah. battle testing.
I yeah, mean, exactly.
Yeah, because, yeah, I don't think Yoshi has ever had yeah, a 200-hour losing streak.
I was getting the impression you were thinking he had, what my old teammate would say is a horseshoe up his ass.
But, right.
You know, no, he grounded, I mean, he won a lot, but.
Is that any more comfortable for a blackjack player than it is for a video poker player?
I don't think so.
You can play standing up in some places. Actually, some places don't allow it, but. Wow. So what happened? Do you remember when the 200-hour losing streak, like where
yeah,
your
mm-hmm.
bankroll was when that happened?
That was actually when I hit about 90 or 100,000. And then I was at a place that was letting me play for 2 months, probably because I was losing for so long. And I was able to grind out of that. But it was halfway through the losing streak. I was just like hour 100 or so. I was just like, oh, I don't know if this is what I want to spend my life doing. Like, I don't know if this is what I want to do. So, but then I got comforted with the fact that like the math hasn't failed me so far up to this point, you know, and I had smaller losing streaks and I was able to dig out of that through the math. So that's kind of something that always like helped me out, was like, hey, like it hasn't failed me yet. So I'm going to keep going until.
When you were at 90 and you hit this mm-hmm. losing streak, how yeah. low did you go before it started
to
turn around?
I lost 30. And then I was there for a while and then I was able to get it back. So. Hmm. But then later, like, you know, that's I heard stories from people before saying like, you know, they told me they're losing horror stories. And I was like, oh, that won't happen to me because I'm so aggressive with my play. Like, because, you know, that but, it, you know, it does and it will happen to you. And it'll get worse, you know, like you'll have losing streaks that are going to be longer and more money later. So that's just a reality that you have to accept going
right.
into it.
And when you started out, were you playing as a refusal or would you get a player's card?
Starting out, I played with player's card a lot just to save money on expenses. And it was just fun, you know, when you're getting into the professional gambling, like it's just like such a fun part of it, getting all the comps and, you know, you're kicking ass at the casino and then grabbing goodies on the way out. So I don't know. It's just like. We had this discussion last night, and I, you know, it's really important if your bankroll is really low to save money on the expenses. But at the same time, like, you only live once, and like, don't just because if do you really just want more money? Like being miserable at the table to make a little extra more money, or do you want to enjoy yourself on the road while you're traveling and living this
yeah.
life? So
yeah, I mean, there comes a point where you institute the no Motel 6 rules.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That took a while. Couple of years. I think we had my girlfriend and I, we had a bed bug incident where,
oh my god,
we were, you know, she woke me up and just screamed because we saw the bed bug was huge and it was crawling around. There was a couple of them and
bug would have been okay.
Yeah, she got bit and that was like, okay, maybe we should like up our game a little bit on the hotels and safes and not be so cheap.
She was with you on this ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was fine with just sleeping in the other bed, you know? Hey, that one bed is infested, so let's just sleep on the other bed. That'd be fine.
Because the bugs don't know how to cross
but she didn't go for that. So.
No, the point I was making is I have my previous wife, Shirley, knew about gambling, and then we got married, and then the first time I lost $3,000 and like it was community property and she freaked and it was no fun. So I don't know how mm-hmm. serious you are with the,
yeah. How did your, when you first approached her with mm-hmm. this idea, hey, I'm going to,
you lose 30,000 in 100 hours. Now is she cool with this? Well, as long as there's no bed bugs.
She was a dealer, previously. So she understood the whole, gambling environment. And then, and, you know, when we started talking, she knew the whole deal right away and she understood everything about it. So
that's really rare.
She plays too. And she's been playing for the past couple of years. So I trained her and then we kind of hit the road together for the past 2 years after I was solo for about 2 years myself.
Oh, so she wasn't in that first
No.
Run
no.
The, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when she met you,
waited
you
until
already
you were rich, and then she came along. That, that helps. So do you work as a team, or
We don't do any BP stuff. We just take turns. We switch off, and you know, because you know, it's really easy for them to identify one of us if the other one's in the building, because it's an easy match to say, oh, we think this might be Joe, but if. And then they see her come in, like, oh, that's definitely Joe. Like, you know, if they have two. So we try to just separate.
You're not known as the yeah. Beauty and the Beast team.
Yeah. I think we're both beauties.
Inner so, beauty.
Yeah.
Well, his girlfriend is actually in the studio as we're talking about
right.
this.
So he has to be careful what he says.
Calling her a beauty is no stretch. So that would be fine.
So you use the high-low.
Mm-hmm, right.
Now, one of the questions that people keep sending me to answer on the show that I haven't done until now is, what does it actually cost you to use the high-low? First of all, I have to say, I'm in your camp that it's better to use the easier count and try to play more hours with less mistakes. But what does it actually cost you to play the high-low versus, and I'm talking about in shoe games now.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, a two or a three level count.
Mm. I'm going to shoot this one over to Colin.
Well, you got to compare apples to apples. So can you play same number of rounds per hour, you know, with the same level of mental fatigue, with the same, you know, limited errors on a more complicated count? And if it's apples to apples, it's maybe, you know, 4 or 5% from the simulations I've run. Like, you know, And what I tell people is it's really easy to get another 4 or 5%. Play 4 or 5 more rounds per hour. You know, if you're playing a simpler count, like, you know, Joe or myself, we can play high-low at, you know, 300 plus rounds per hour. And this isn't fabricated. This is like dealers or a pit boss said, clearly Joe isn't a card counter because he's playing too fast. You know, well, could he do that with high op two with an ace side count, you know?
Right. And my argument has always been, even if they could, I mean, because they always claim that they can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can play even drinking and, you know, I don't make mistakes and all that. But I think it can go as high as a 10% difference.
Sure.
But if you could play an extra 10 minutes because you're not fatigued.
Yes.
Or add an extra green chip onto your bet.
Yes.
You're going to make up for it.
So at a point, I taught myself high up too. Early on, both Ben and I, who I ran a team with, we were teaching ourselves halves. But the reality is with high-low, I can play fast. I can be natural and comfortable in the casino. And if I have to answer a question from the pit boss, I'm not having to adjust my feet and everything to make sure I've got my ace side count. And it just feels like for at least our ethos, which is like, it's really the Ian Anderson, keep it simple, stupid, you know, like learn the system, do it fast, efficiently, get the hours in, be aggressive. It, you know, it's everything Tommy Hyland says is what I would argue. And I think some people can't help themselves, but want to have to prove that they can do the most complex. And if you're doing it for a mental exercise, great. But my friends have made the most money. It's been with high-low or something equivalent.
Yeah, mine too.
What about the fact that the pit, if they're watching, they're comparing your play against high-low because they assume you're playing high-low. And the more advanced counts are not going to match up accordingly. Is it possible you'd be able to play longer by not using the high-low?
No, because 95% of the time they are going to correlate. And it's no longer a pit boss who's counting you down. It's somebody in the eye who's using software. And the software is just going to look at all your bets and see which ones were – how much were you betting when the count was positive and how much were you betting when it was negative. And even if you're making some errors, they're still just going to throw you out.
I think maybe
– I withdraw the question.
Maybe like one or two places where it's really small and you have a pit boss who's kind of like an AP enthusiast, but he doesn't know that much and maybe give you a little bit of time, but 99% of the places, no.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and which brings us to the subject of cover, mm-hmm. right? Do you play any cover? Did you play any cover?
Okay, yeah, I wanted to get into this because like my I think with my personality and getting into this, like, I just, like, hated giving up anything to the casino. Like, and especially when you have a small bankroll, you can't afford to do any kind of cover. But even past that, even when I had enough to do the cover, it just felt like slimy to me to, like, give them anything. Like, I just play super aggressive, maximize as much as I possibly can, and I just move on. Like, I'm not afraid of, like, backoffs. It doesn't bother me. Like, it bothers a lot of people. Like, I'm not afraid of the driving. I have like a million Gambling with an Edge episodes to listen to for hours on the road. Like, I don't care.
We've only done 600. How was that?
So I didn't mind the Road Warrior thing. Because I think that turns a lot of people off. Like, the backoffs is a big thing for people. If you can eliminate that, that anxiety and eliminate, that fear, that can take you a long way with card counting.
So when you're saying you play no cover, does that mean you'll split tens?
Oh, yeah, totally. I thought you meant, like, betting big when it's negative or anything like that.
Oh, no. Well, there are some people who make these plays, like, always insuring a blackjack or...
Oh, I see, yeah.
They always stand with 16 against a 10, even if it's negative, or they don't hit soft 18 in certain, you know.
I have an anecdote. When I was playing full-time, I remember... you know, I read Ian Anderson's book, Burning the Tables of Las Vegas. I love it. It was required reading for people on our team. But I don't anymore recommend his cover plays. But I was in Vegas and I was going into what was the London Club at the time, upstairs in Aladdin. And I decided I'm going to use the ultimate gambit, you know, the cover plays, the cover bets, everything. And it's going to be amazing. And I go up there and I have this hot shoe and I win, you know, 24,000 or something like that in a shoe, and I get backed off, and all I could think about was the EV I left on the table. You know, I didn't last any longer, but I cost myself. It's that same thing Joe's talking about of, like, it hurts to leave any money on, like, give the casinos any of that money. And, you know, maybe it was anecdotal and it was just one time, but it felt like, why would I sacrifice, you know, this large percentage of my EV if I'm still going to get backed off because I'm 20 whatever years old and winning, you know, five figures.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, it's not as fun. Like, I think some people, I think it's just based on your personality. If you like kind of like trying to get away with it and flying under the radar, like, that would totally suit you. But for me, like, doing that, it just is not fun. Like, I like rustling their feathers. Like, I like getting in their face, you know, not into being meaner, but just with my style of play. Like, I don't.
And do you keep playing until you're barred, or do you do any hit and run?
Yeah, it depends. 90% is just play to a bar, but it's usually because I'm in a rural location, so there's not anywhere else to go for like 4 or 5 hours, so you have to just play till it's over. But now, like, since I've a lot more recognized, I'll do a little bit less waiting till the back off, because that novelty is a little bit gone now. If I want to see all the casinos in the U.S., I've been so many places, and I've seen so many casinos and experienced so many things. Counting cards, that I don't have that same desire to, like, get backed off everywhere. But that was just the engine that fueled me for the first couple of years.
So you're driving all over the country. Are you taking the time to be a tourist?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And seeing the museums or the boat rides or the whatever it is in a particular
town. The thing. 70 miles until the thing.
Until the thing. Yeah, the 800-foot goose or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, tons of sightseeing in between there. It's like, that's like one of the best parts about it, is the first best part is the freedom of schedule. And then the second best part is being able to see all these things that you wouldn't have otherwise, you know.
Well, the other thing, too, is that it's a meritocracy, right? You're going to get out as much as you put into it, and nobody, well, they can try to limit how much you work, but pretty much you can work as much as you want or as little as you want.
And another reason why I didn't do the cover very much, I have like a list here that I wrote down as I would, you know, at the beginning, I kind of want to get as much information from casino managers as I could as to what their mind state was when they were backing me off. And the things that they would tell me, these are all like the reasons that they assumed that I wasn't a card counter. One of them was like, I talk too much to the floor and pit bosses, usually APs, just avoid those people. They don't talk, they don't look them in the eye. They don't like joke with them a lot. You know, they try to avoid them. You know, talking too much to the dealer where I'm playing. Some people say I'm not looking at the cards long enough to be able to see what it is. Playing too quickly. Getting up a lot from the table. Going on my phone, but then I'm jumping in later in the shoe. But they didn't know that I was looking out of the corner of my eye every, you know, a couple of seconds, just keeping up with the count and stuff like that. And
so wait, so these guys would tell you why?
Yeah.
Why they thought you weren't a counter?
Yeah, well, I was trying to get the information out of them at the beginning because I wanted to know, like, how come you let me play so long? Like, I just wanted to see what it was. And and some of the things were just the deviations. We do throw them off if they don't know all of them. And dividing by half decks was throwing them off on the double deck. And going from min to table max was, one manager told me that, was because he's seen card counters come and they do like the ramping up. But if you have a big enough bankroll, it's min to max. And
so they're used to all confused. The people yeah. trying to play cover.
Yeah. And then Googling my real name and then seeing that like I have a career other than before, you know.
So. That was when you were playing with a player's card. Now, nowadays, are you just a refusal?
Yeah, now I'm a lot more refusal now. It's harder to get comps for sure. Yeah.
How long did it take you to get into the database?
It was about a month. It was about a month.
From a month into your starting play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny because I think a lot of people have this attitude, oh my God, I'm in the database, my career is over. And basically everyone I know that has been in this business has made more money after they were in the database than before. Yeah. Not because they were in the database, just that it didn't really limit them much in it, you know.
It's crazy because sometimes I'll go somewhere that I've been backed off before. Like last year, I went somewhere that they backed me off a year ago. I only got 30 minutes the first year. And the second year, I was there for like 3 days and I was playing rated. It just didn't make any sense to me. And they had Biometrica, like they had everything. And it just didn't make any, like it just, and that happens all the time. Like this recycle of your playing time. That's why I feel like Blackjack is still viable today, is because we have just the right amount of players and a ton of casinos that are spread out. Most of these casinos only get 1 to 2 counters a year. And so it's enough for your name to kind of shuffle down to the bottom of the pile if everyone's moving around. So it's
right.
It's hard for them to get a handle on us. Like they give us enough hours. So I have another stat here for you guys. Because people ask me all the time, how much playing time do you get before back off? And I looked at all my results and the amount of time, less than 1 hour has been 33% of the time. Playing 1 to 4 hours and a backoff happens is 40% of the time. And then sessions that last over 4 hours, a full maximizing no cover is like 27% of the time. So 67% of the time is over an hour, no cover.
There's a phenomenon called the headwinds, tailwinds, where we pay more attention to the headwinds, the things that are difficult, than the tailwinds, you know. So this totally fits into that, where he has equal number of sessions that are over 4 hours as under an hour, but we remember the 15-minute back off. Mm-hmm. So that people, even at the boot camp we were doing this last weekend, they're saying like, well, how do you make money when you get backed off every 15 minutes? And it's like, well, it feels like you get backed off every 15 minutes. But if you look at the data, it's not, you know, a third of the time it's less than an hour, and nearly a third of the time it's more than 4 hours.
And what about in areas where there are multiple casinos in one city?
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that? I mean,
yeah, it gets tough sometimes. The flyering is just a huge pain.
Like let's pick I'm just going to pick a city at random, say Biloxi, Mississippi.
Okay, cool.
Right. So, right. I mean, Biloxi, you go in, let's say you get 4 hours in the first place, but now you get backed off.
Yeah.
Do you move out of Biloxi or do you still try to play the other places in Biloxi?
Now it kind of seems that way. It seems like Biloxi is kind of like a one-day thing. Like you can get a full 24-hour. If you just go out, you can get a full day and then your name's going to be flyered everywhere in that town. I think there are a few pockets of the country that are like that. But for the most part, it's I haven't seen that experience. I think if you drive like 3-ish hours before, you're safe from a local flyer at most places, but not all. Like some places like Louisiana, they send it like 7 hours away. But I mean, for the most part,
but like if you're in the middle of the country,
right?
Say you're in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive 3 hours out of Chicago, now you're okay again.
It kind of seems that way. A lot of big cities are kind of like
interesting
that.
Interesting kind of rule of thumb.
Yeah,
but and what if you're like in a Harrah's in Chicago? Would they alert all Harrah's across the whole country or just the local ones?
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically Biometrica sends your stuff out to everyone who's subscribed, but it seems like only the local places get that right in the front center of their, you know, whatever they're looking at. So you know, it also depends on your playing style too. If you're on a long extended road trip, you can't just fly out to another city, you know, if you want to be doing all the driving yourself. So my first year, my approach was just like, just go everywhere, like just drive like everywhere and just get as much time as I could. And
how long were you away from home?
It was about 7 months.
So straight.
Yeah, pretty much. Wow. Yeah. Every now and then I'll take a weekend to go home, visit some friends and family, but I played a lot my first year.
It's crazy.
Couldn't get enough.
How much did you tip?
Okay, so the tipping, it's so rare. Like, that has to be a really special circumstance where I can quantify that it's worth it. I don't like tipping out of fear. Like, that's something that bothers me. Like a few situations I can recall where it was worth it was one time I was at a casino and the dealer was also the manager and was also the table games director. You know, it was a tiny place. So I had no choice. Like, I didn't want to piss this person off.
Was he the bartender too?
Probably. So that was the situation where I thought that was definitely worth it. Another situation, I was playing somewhere and I requested a dealer that was incredibly fast, like 700 rounds an hour. And
is that possible? 700 rounds an hour?
Yeah. So this person was incredible. Like, they were like a professional gamer before this. So their hand eye coordination was phenomenal. And they had all the chips lined up for me. Like, when you play $25 and you have a blackjack, you know, they have the annoying like 50 cent piece and the 10, and then it takes a while for them to, but he would like stack all the 1250 in the whole rack, so he would just have it ready so it can be as fast as possible. And then I worked out a deal with the manager, like, hey, can I pay you guys like a certain amount per hour to have this guy come at my table for his whole shift every time he's here? So that was worth it because I could quantify how much that tip was worth and how much I was getting out of it, you know.
And you didn't come up with a 700 rounds per hour number?
No. I was watching it, and I had the pit boss count for me the rounds. Because we kind of made it a game, like, because everyone was just blown away, like, how fast he was dealing and how fast I was playing. So I asked the pit boss, like, hey, can you count how many rounds per hour he's, like, doing? So we did it for, like, you know, sample size, like, a couple shoes, and then we would just figure how much an hour it was. And also,
I'm thinking that pit boss was arithmetically
I'm still
challenged.
Finding this hard to believe because, yeah. I mean, were you playing one? When you say rounds, are you saying if you're playing three hands, you're counting that as three? Or are you counting that as one?
One, yeah, one full round, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, that's like 12 shoes or something per hour.
It was so great.
And this is like, they determined he can't be a card counter
because he's playing too fast.
Yeah, and so then it was this game. You know, they assume they just have this gambler that's paying to have a fast dealer, and so it made this game out of how fast can he play. And
that also alleviated their concerns too. One of the other pit bosses told me, he was like, yeah, this is our counter. This is our like anti card counter dealer. And it was like perfect.
they ran into the wrong card counter.
Please don't throw me in that briar patch.
And one other place that we felt was worth tipping was when we were playing, and it was like a mafia-owned place, so that was probably worth it.
Wait, a mafia-owned place? Is this in the United States?
No, it
was international. It was somewhere in Europe, and they had a bad reputation previous. Their other casinos were shut down because of like money laundering ties.
Is this Czechoslovakia?
I don't want to say because people have their hand in the pot of this place still. But yeah, so that we felt that was worth it.
So actually, that brings up international play. So have you started obviously playing internationally?
Yeah, I played a little bit in Korea. It's probably nothing like it was when you were there. But I mean, there are still a few games here and there. You just had to look for it. And we just had a really long trip in Europe, mostly Western Europe, and it was just like mostly a nightmare. Like, oh, it was so hard. So many like. I mean, you know, a sea of CSMs, like just everywhere you go. And the hours of operation, this is something I didn't anticipate was a problem in Europe, was the hours of operation. Their table games are only open from like starting at like 9 or 10 p.m. and then they close like 1 or 2. So you spend all day driving to get to a place. You have to wait till 9. You see that the conditions aren't bad, and then you have to drive 2 hours to the next place, and then your day's almost over. It's like in the U.S., you can spend all that time driving to the place, and you always have an opportunity to look and scout and see. But here, it's a lot. It was so much waiting and so much driving, low limits, like everywhere.
Wow, that's different than my experience.
Before we continue with hearing about Joe's international travel, we're going to take a few commercials. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In March, the monthly promotion is geared towards players who are already receiving a mailer. Rather than pick up your usual free play from Tuesday to Thursday, now you pick up from Monday through Wednesday, and you get the same amount of play on Friday or Saturday the same week. If you pick up the free play all 8 periods in March, you receive twice the amount of your regular free play on Monday, April 2nd. The next video poker class is probably going to be in July. We have finished with the current semester, and when the next ones are coming up, you'll be the first to know about it. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. The game of the week is Max Action Poker. This is a 10 coins per line game where a lot of the pay schedule categories are juiced. In the double-double version, for example, you get the normal 5 coins for jacks or better, 2 pair, but 3 of a kind goes up to 25, straight goes up to 40, flush goes up to 60, full house goes up to 100, and the 4 of a kinds get much bigger. So royals are 8,000, straight flushes are 800, 4 aces with 2, 3, or 4 are 8,000. So these are significant boosts. It is easy to figure out the value of it by just plugging these numbers into Video Poker for Winners or other software. And then, of course, it's going to come out with like 198%. But you have to divide it by 2 because it's based on a 10-coin game rather than a 5-coin game. But you need to work out the strategy because you're getting a lot more for full houses and flushes and straights, which are big determinations of how you play. All right, we are talking to Joe, who still can't find his last name. Now, you were talking about playing in Korea. Have you played anywhere else overseas?
Let's see. I just played in Guatemala, just like 1 or 2 shoes, just to see what it was like. But that was, I wasn't there for a blackjack trip. And
I didn't know they had casinos in Guatemala.
Yeah, they're in shopping malls, you know, and they have armed guards with like AK-47s outside the door. So,
oh, that'll help you relax.
That was what Moscow was like when they had casinos, and metal detectors.
And other than, you know, Bahamas, I haven't played that much international. I was actually so relieved to come back to the U.S. I was like, I love this country. After our Europe trip, I was like, I had a new perspective on the state of blackjack in the U.S. versus the rest of the world. I mean, it's just the gambling culture is just not the same in other places. People don't play $500 a hand in the middle of nowhere in other countries. Like here, you can find $500 max tables in the middle of nowhere, like nothing around. And there's high limit tables, like...
I'm surprised that the tables weren't opening until 9 o'clock at night, because I haven't played in Europe in a long time, but they would usually open earlier than that. But the other, like, I don't know if you went to the south of France, but like in Cannes, it seems like the casinos are really only open in the summer limited hours, you know, but it's great, like during the Cannes Film Festival or something. But
that might have been a problem too, because we were there like in the winter, so that could have affected the hours too. I also think I just wanted to touch on something. I feel like a lot of advantage players, they move on from blackjack not necessarily because like the money is better in other plays. I mean, sometimes definitely, but I feel like for the most part, it's based out of, because they just can't take the back-offs and lifestyle anymore, which I totally understand.
The back-offs and the travel.
Yeah, I totally get that. Like, it can be super hard sometimes. Like, and, you know, it can feel lonely, like, without a team. Like, I get it. But I also still feel like blackjack is lucrative if you're doing it the right way. And I feel like card counting is still, like, a good way to make a living if you can get past, like, if the back-offs, like, you know, if you can make it work in your favor emotionally, then it can... I think it can be a great career for you.
Now, obviously, your bankroll has gotten up high enough where you don't have to worry about max bets. But did you reach the point where you decided to bet less? Because casinos take certain amounts better than others.
Yeah, I am. A friend of mine, AJ, he had this over, he looked at his career for, you know, and he said he noticed that, like, when he would up his max bet, you know, it would just bring him back down, and then he has to resize, you know, to be safe. And that ping pong was just going back and forth for a long time. So eventually he found a happy medium and just stuck with that. And I'm looking into that a lot more now, because I know it's like higher EV to like get the higher max bet out there, but if you have to, you know, resize all the time.
Well, I don't mean so much resizing. I'm talking about, like, for example, I was playing at a casino in Iowa.
Yeah.
And they had $1,000 max.
Yeah.
And the guy walked by and he looked at my bet and he said, I had two hands of 900. He said, is that 1,000? I said, no, it's 900. And he said, okay, because if you bet the max, I have to call the casino manager or whatever. I was like, oh, I never bet that much.
Right.
So yeah. 1,800 on two hands is not 1,000 on one hand. So,
I can't tell you how many times I've gone into a place with like 1,000 max, and I'll say to myself, okay, today's the day. I'm going to just keep it at like 500. Let's see how this goes. And then the count just goes, I'm just like, I just can't resist. Like,
oh, I wouldn't go down to 500. Yeah, but yeah.
That's just part of my personality. I just can't resist like getting the EV sometimes. Like, even if it's better for me in the long run, but I don't have that concrete proof. I can't see into the future. So I don't want to, I don't like having regrets, leaving EV on the table. Mm-hmm. Potentially.
You talked earlier that you had two illegal detainments.
Yeah.
As you know, Bob Nersessian is one of our favorite guests on this show. Mm-hmm. Was this anything he might be interested in, or is it something you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think at the time I was kind of just starting out, so I don't think I would have been able to afford Bob at the time. But so this was in the Midwest, and they two security, you know, I just. Manager came up. It was a really pleasant back off. He was actually really polite. And I went to go cash out. Security comes up. He's like, hey, come with us. I was like, no, I'm just going to cash out. And then they're like, no, you're not. And then two of them just like grabbed me, drug me into the back room, and wouldn't let me leave. So
was this Indian casino? Or
no, it was state run. Uh-huh. So I called a lawyer. We talked to the casino, and basically they ended up settling, but it was for a kind of a small amount. In that same county, there was a man who got his ass beat by the police, had exorbitant medical bills, and he was only able to get a $30,000 settlement. So I had no physical injury. So we kind of just took what they gave us and moved on. But I kind of wish, looking back, I wish I would have pursued it a little more and just held out on the money and just tried to go for it all the way.
And what was the second one?
The second one was it was like a. Again, another place in the Midwest. I don't know what's with the Midwest. Why are they so aggressive?
I don't know. That Louisiana seems pretty aggressive too. Yeah. I mean, it's not just the Midwest.
I went to this place. I got backed off. I came back a year later, and they saw me playing, and they arrested me for trespassing. You know, and then I had to deal with that whole thing. It's just like they never told me I was trespassed. Like, they just backed me off. And later in their shift reports, they said that, you know, that they were required to ban me for 24 hours, and that's all documented. But there was a security report that said that supposedly they said that one of the security guards told me I was 86, but the management, that wasn't the protocol. That's not what they wanted them to do. So then we had to fight that out in court, and I ended up losing that one still. And the judge like took a card counting class before, and he still didn't side with me for some reason. So. It was a really small town, and I just feel like their loyalties lie there than with passing by a card counter.
Out of towner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do either you or your girlfriend use disguises?
We tried that a little bit. We tried that on the East Coast at a really large casino. We got an Uber car, so our license plate wasn't the same. And, you know, I had a wig and had a whole different look, and she did as well. But they still ended up, like, figuring out who we were. And they updated us in OSN, like, with our names and everything. And we never showed ID, so.
So when you said you trade off.
I was also in a disguise when I was arrested, too. So I was like,
And what did they think about that?
That added more suspicion for them. They're like, oh, you knew you were trespassed. That's why you wore the disguise. I was like, no, it's because I played like five places like in the town over. So, but anyway.
You mentioned that you and your girlfriend trade off. So how does that work? You do all this driving and you're like, okay, honey, go to work and I'll be here taking a nap.
I do all the driving. What we do is we go. one of us will go play, and then the other one's just like waiting in the car, just hanging out there. And little pro tip, we got a portable urinal that comes way in handy for not having to go in the casino and be noticed.
Does she mind sharing with you?
Oh my god,
that was, it was, it was my idea. I think I've used it a lot more than she has.
So this sounds awful. Wait a minute, you drive for like 4 hours and then you just sit in the car for hours?
Yeah, I think I can't speak for her, but for me, I mean, I just, yeah. Look, I mean, I guess it does sound awful, but I don't know. I mean, you know, we.
Well, wait, and then, so let's say she plays for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And you're sitting in the car for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And then what do you do?
I'm just like, hell yeah, she got 4 hours. Let's make it eight.
Yeah, but when she comes. When she's done, then do you go in and play? And she sits in the car for 4 hours.
No, we won't do that. I'll wait till the next trip to play at that place. We kind of trade off that way, so it's not. I think they wouldn't just notice me too fast if another card counter comes in the next day or something. So that's how we trade off. But if there's like a Starbucks or something, we'll get dropped off, and then we can hang out there.
You're in a town with two casinos, right. Do you go to the? Does one go?
Yeah,
to one
we'll switch
one
off. Yeah, we'll do that. So. If there's a place we can hang out while the other one's playing, we try to do that as much as we can. But sometimes, like, you know, native reservation in the middle of nowhere, you just got to hang out in the car. Like,
wow.
But I'm also 4 years into this. I'm not, I don't have 20, 30 years under my belt.
Well, that would make it less likely for me to want to hang out in the car,
So it's still, I don't know, it's still exciting for me. I still enjoy it, and I still like beating the casino. I'll beat the casino enough to pee in my car. You know? That's my motto.
Is there anywhere, any casinos in the U.S. you haven't peed in yet? No, you haven't played in yet.
Any casinos I haven't played in yet? Oh, yeah, there's probably 20 or 30 I haven't even stepped foot in.
20 or 30?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, it's not very many. But are they in a particular section? Are they?
Yeah, some of like the lower, like I've never been to Colorado. I've never been to the Dakotas, those lower limit places.
What about, aren't there casinos in Maine now? Have you been all the way up to Maine?
We skipped those because they were kind of far from our, because we were
gonna definitely far. Yeah,
we were doing some sightseeing on the National Park, Acadia National Park up there. And that's all the way on the coast and the casinos. I heard the conditions are horrible, so we didn't even try.
It's in Bar Harbor. It's lovely.
It's better than the casino, sure.
All right. Colin, your blackjack apprenticeship has been getting a lot of plugs today. Anything you want to tell us about what's going on with you guys?
I mean, we just had a boot camp this weekend. That's why we're all hanging out. So we do this 3-4 times a year. We have a 2-day training with people. Most of them are members of the site that they want to, you know, have the live training, learn some things that we don't feel comfortable sharing, you know, really on the internet, and, you know, network with the pros, all that stuff. So we've been doing that we did that Saturday, Sunday. And sometimes we get a guest, like Tommy Hyland's been really kind and been a guest speaker a number of times. And we've had like ex-surveillance experts come in and share from their side. I mean, I don't feel a need to plug stuff, but that's what we've been doing the last 2 days.
Actually, so have you moved beyond counting at all? Have you added anything to your repertoire?
So I've been, introduced to some stuff, but I just can't, like the hole carding, for example, like I just can't do it. Like I can't do the scouting. When I'm on the road, I want to just play. Like that's just my personality. That's just what works for me. And I can't, like, it would drive me crazy if I drove around for like a week or 2 weeks and not being able to put a single bet down. Like that would just drive me nuts. So
we have another guy. He helps with all of our boot camps. He came through a boot camp like 6 years ago, but he's moved on to strictly, more advanced plays, particularly hole carding. And so he gives a kind of a talk, kind of an intro to that stuff. And it's really interesting how much of it is personality, you know. Yeah. Tommy Hyland, no interest. You know, right. This other guy, he counted cards for a year and then was like, nope, it's not for me. I'd rather scout, find the five. He's like, I haven't played anything with less than a 5% edge in years. And there's not a right answer. It's personality and multiple ways to skin the casinos.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Joe, we're about to let you go. Is there anything that you wanted to tell us that we haven't asked you about?
I don't know, just reflecting back, I'd probably try to eat a little healthier when I was on the road the past several years, because I'm starting to see the effects of that now. So
that is a tough one.
Yeah. That's about it, though.
Although there are, you know, you can get some quality food at Waffle House.
Yeah, I've heard in Louisiana there are more Waffle Houses than schools. I'm not sure. Is that true?
Probably the only place where you can get a deep-fried salad.
All right. So before we get hate mail, thank you, Joe. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.